guys, it's Jackal. Haven't been around in a hot second, so I figured let's do a recording for old time's sake. And we're going to do a hysterical literature piece, The Prince by Machiavelli, one of my favorites of all times, with the use of Hitachi wand while wearing a plug. So let's get this party started, eh? Chapter 17. Concerning cruelty and kindness, and whether it is better to be loved than feared. Coming now to the other qualities mentioned above, every prince ought to desire to be considered kind and not cruel. Nevertheless, he ought to take care not to misuse his kindness. Cesar Borgia was considered cruel, but notwithstanding, his cruelty calmed the Romagna, unified it, and restored it to peace and loyalty. And if this is carefully considered, he will be seen to have been much more merciful than the Florentine people, who, to avoid a reputation for cruelty, permitted Pistoia to be destroyed. Therefore, a prince, so long as he keeps his subjects united and loyal, ought not to mind the criticism of cruelty. By making an example of a few people, he will be more merciful than those who, through too much mercy, allow rebellions to arise, from which follows murders or robberies. These are likely to injure the whole people, while those killings which are commanded by the prince only affect the individual. And of all princes, it is impossible for the new prince to avoid the reputation for cruelty. This is because new states are full of dangers. Nevertheless, a prince ought to be slow to believe and to act, and should not show fear. He should proceed in a calm manner, with care and concern for others, so that too much confidence does not make him careless, and too much distrust does not make him always suspicious. Related to this, a question arises, whether it is better to be loved than feared, or feared than loved. It may be answered that one should wish to be both, but because it is difficult to unite them in one person, it is much safer to be feared than loved, when only one is possible. The reason for this is that in general, men are ungrateful, inconstant, false, cowardly, and greedy. As long as you succeed, they are yours entirely. They will offer you their blood, property, life, and children, when the need is far distant. But when the need approaches, they turn against you. A prince who, relying entirely on their promises, has neglected other ways of protecting himself, will be ruined. Friendships that are attained by payments and not by greatness or nobility of mind may indeed be earned, but they are not secured, and in that time of need cannot be relied upon. Men are less worried about offending one who is loved than one who is feared. Love is preserved by the link of gratefulness, which, owing to the weak nature of men, is broken at every opportunity for their advantage. But fear preserves you by a fear of punishment which never fails. Nevertheless, a prince ought to encourage fear in such a way that if he does not win love, he avoids hatred. He can carry on very well being feared while he is not hated, which will always be as long as he keeps away from the property of his citizens and subjects and from their women. But when it is necessary for him to proceed against the life of someone, he must do it with proper justification and for obvious reasons. But above all things, he must keep his hands off the property of others, because men more quickly forget the death of their father than the loss of their inheritance. Besides, it is always easy to create reasons for taking away property. Anyone who has once begun to live by robbery will always find reasons for seizing what belongs to others. But reasons for taking life, on the other hand, are much more difficult to find and are hard to keep justifying. But when a prince is with his army and has hundreds of soldiers under his command, then it is necessary for him not to worry about having a reputation for cruelty, because without it he will not keep his army united or disposed to do its duties. Among the wonderful deeds of Hannibal, this one is described, that having led an enormous army composed of various races of men to fight in foreign lands, no disagreements arose either among them or against the prince, no matter whether things were going badly or well. This arose from nothing else than his inhuman cruelty, which with his boundless courage made him respected and terrible in the sight of his soldiers. Without that cruelty, his other virtues were not sufficient to produce this effect. Short-sighted writers admire his deeds from one point of view, and from another criticize the principal cause of them. Evidence for this can be seen in the sky to Scipio, that most excellent man, not only of his own times, but within the memory of man, against whom, nevertheless, his army rebelled in Spain. This arose from nothing but his too great kindness, which gave his soldiers more freedom than is consistent with military discipline. For this he was criticized in the Senate by Fabius Maximus and called a bad leader. Also, because of his easy nature, he did not punish one of his officers who exploited the Locrians. Someone in the Senate, wishing to excuse him, said there were many men who knew much better how not to make errors than to correct the errors of others. This kindness as a commander would have eventually destroyed Scipio's reputation and glory. Fortunately, he was under the control of the Senate, so this dangerous characteristic not only remained hidden, but contributed to his glory. Returning to the question of being feared or loved, I come to the conclusion that because men love according to their own will and fear according to the will of the prince, a wise prince should establish himself on that which is in his own control and not in the control of others. He must try, however, to avoid hatred. Chapter 18, Concerning the Way in Which Princes Should Keep Faith. Everyone admits how good it is to keep a prince in faith and to live with integrity and not the trickery. Nevertheless, our experience has been those princes who have done great things have held good faith of little account and have known how to get their way through cheating. In the end, they have overcome those who have relied on their word. You must know that there are two ways of winning, one by the rules and the other by force. The first method is suited to men, the second to beasts. But because the first is frequently not sufficient, it is necessary to use the second. Therefore, it is not necessary for a prince to understand how to use the ways of both the beast and the man. This has been taught by example to princes by ancient writers who describe how Achilles and many other princes of old were given to Chiron, who was half horse and half man, to nurse, who brought them up in his discipline. This means that they had for a teacher one who was half beast and half human. So it is necessary. It is necessary to know how to make use of both natures, and that one without the other is not sufficient. A prince, therefore, being forced knowingly to adopt the beast, ought to choose the fox and the lion. Because the lion cannot defend himself against traps, and the fox cannot defend himself against wolves. Therefore, it is necessary to be a fox to discover the traps, and a lion to frighten the wolves. Those who rely simply on the lion do not understand what they are doing. Therefore, a wise lord cannot, nor ought he, keep faith when such promises may be turned against him, and when the reasons that caused him to promise no longer exist. If men were entirely good, this principle would not hold. But because they are bad, and will not keep faith with you, you too are not bound to observe it with them. There will never be a shortage of good reasons to excuse going back on your word. Endless modern examples of this could be given, showing how many agreements have been broken by princes, and how he who has known best how to employ the fox has succeeded best. But it is necessary to know how to hide this characteristic well and to be a great pretender. People are so simple and so subject to present necessities. That anyone who seeks to deceive will always find someone who will allow himself to be deceived. One recent example I cannot pass over in silence. Pope Alexander VI did nothing but deceive men, nor ever did thought of doing otherwise. He always found people to fool because there was never a man who could so convincingly say something was true. Fuck, I'm gonna come and promise something and yet be so unlikely to do it. Nevertheless, his lies always succeeded according to his wishes, because he understood the side of mankind very well. Therefore, it is necessary for a prince to have all the good qualities I have described, but it is necessary to appear to have them. And I shall dare to say this also. That to have these qualities and always to observe them is dangerous, and that to appear to have them is useful. A prince should appear merciful, faithful, kind, religious, upright, but should be flexible enough to make use. Fuck, I'm coming. Some opposite qualities when it is necessary. Fuck.